track from Zoe Celeste, their debut album from New York, Restless Thoughts, and a track called Big Trouble. Before that, we had Jay Lynn and a track featuring Bjork called Borealis from the Acoma release, fourth album and first in 7 years, all the way from the Indiana-based electronic artist. And we have joining us now our first guest for the show today with a feature piece in the April issue of Alberta Views magazine on Alberta is Burning, looking at wildfires in the province and what we are going to do about it. It's Trina Moyles, who is the author of Lookout, Love, Solitude, and Searching for Wildfire in the Boreal Forest, a memoir out on Penguin, published in 2021, and has worked for many years working in fire towers in northern Alberta. And she joins us this morning from Whitehorse. Good morning, Trina. How are you?
Good morning, Peter. Thanks for having me on the show.
Great to have you on the show today. And obviously an issue that's we're all kind of worried about after the summer, the smoky summers that we had across Alberta last year, and wondering if this is sort of the new normal in the province. I guess, when did your journey studying and watching wildfires begin?
Yeah, so I grew up in the Peace River country of northern Alberta, and I'd always known about wildfire towers, and living in a rural community in northern Alberta, I certainly grew up being aware of wildfires. So I joined Alberta Wildfire as a fire tower lookout in 2016. That was the same year that the Horace River fire evacuated the community of Fort McMurray. And so I worked for 7 years in the Peace River country at two different fire towers with Alberta Wildfire.
And what did you, I know you've written an entire book on it, and I can imagine there's a whole aspect we won't get into today about just the solitude of working in fire towers. Maybe those of us, I know in hiking to some, I've certainly thought about what it would be like to be there sort of all alone for a summer at a time. But I mean, what did you learn about nature and watching fires and wildfires during that time? Or what are some of the things you can touch on without...
Yeah, it's certainly a job that is sort of this romantic idea in our minds, just the way, you know, the same way the idea of the lighthouse sort of enchants us. In reality, it's a really difficult position, actually, and especially with the intensifying sort of climate conditions that we're seeing year to year. So the job is, you know, involves sitting up in a tower and really being like the first eyes on what could be a potential wildfire. So we're looking for smoke. Lookout observers are paying really close attention to the weather. They sort of, I always joked that you started to sort of feel it in your bones. You could wake up and feel like, is it going to be a burning day? Just from that close observation of just the daily accumulation of weather patterns and what's happening in the, you know, the 40 kilometer radius of forest around your fire tower. So there's 100 active fire towers in Alberta, and they work together to, triangulate their bearings on wildfire smoke. So you work really closely with your neighbors, and you know, you're chatting with crews that are flying overhead and trying to locate potential smokes as quickly as possible. So yeah, I think I really gained a close, intimate look at the way wildfires are catalyzed in the boreal forest and the conditions that, you know, drive their acceleration, and then, you know, literally being able to observe communities that are in the line of fire. So in 2019, I was sandwiched between the Chuck Egg fire, which threatened communities around High Level, Alberta, and then the Bassett fire, which threatened the town of Manning in northern Alberta. So it was pretty jaw-dropping to watch those fires blow up. The Chuck Egg was 3 times the size of Calgary. That's hard to visualize. But essentially for my fire tower, looked like an atomic bomb had gone off. It was probably the wildest thing I've ever seen. So yeah, I was really, during my experience as a lookout, I definitely was exposed to some of these, you know, intensifying fire seasons that we're observing And I was not there for the 2023 season, but spoke very closely with my previous colleagues about what they were observing and just the difficulty of last year's season.
It seems like things are really, at least from a sort of outsider, at least not insider in terms of living up in a fire tower, but as an insider living in an Alberta city or town, it seems like things are intensifying. And I guess that's kind of what you dive into in this piece in Alberta Views, in the April issue. Who did you, you mentioned you spoke to some of your past colleagues. Who did you, can you give us a little bit more detail about who you spoke to for various perspectives?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I spoke with Mike Flanagan, who is a wildfire scientist. His experience spans 40 years in Western Canada. And, you know, Mike reiterated what a lot of us felt within the sector, that, you know, last year was a season that it didn't come out of nowhere. It was like a freight train. This is his words. It was like a freight train we should have seen coming. And, that window of time in Alberta between winter and spring, that transition period, this is when the snow is melting. There's, you know, the trees haven't greened up yet. The grass hasn't greened up yet. This is a really volatile time for fires to ignite. And this is typically when Alberta gets their largest historic fires. And so, you know, and within the industry, there was a real fear. Since 2016, there's been a number of cuts to Alberta Wildfire. Those cuts are both seasonal firefighters and fire personnel, so boots on the ground, and then also at a management level too. In 2021, we saw 57 positions cut to Alberta Wildfire. Those are positions like wildfire rangers who manage, you know, the seasonal workers, who train the seasonal workers. So we really went into the 2023 season with a deficit of people power. And that view was reiterated and expressed by folks at the Alberta Union of Provincial Employees as well. I spoke with Mike Dempsey, who is actually a conservation officer and ranger in his previous career. So he knows that subject very well. So there was a lot of fear going into the 2023 season. It probably did shock a lot of the public, but for folks who have been working very closely with wildfire, it actually didn't come as a shock. Although the scale at which of the, you know, structural loss and loss to communities and just the sheer amount of land that burnt, that really did surprise people. And Mike Flanagan told me that, you know, there was a lot of concern from everybody during the summer when communities were imminently threatened and there was the issue of smoke, you know, and we saw smoke travel to places in North America that it wouldn't typically reach. So it really was present in people's minds. But actually, in September, this was very, like, this was hardly reported on. But on September 23rd, one of the fires that had ignited in June in northern Alberta around high level actually took a 700,000 hectare run in a day. And that broke Canadian records in modern history. So, that did shock Mike Flanagan, he told me. So the fact that we're seeing these large wildfire excursion, that's what we talk about. Excursion is the word we use when a fire jumps a perimeter that's been set up by firefighters. And to see that kind of fire activity so late in the fire season is really what should be, you know, shocking. The fire season is getting earlier and it is persisting later because of these climate events that we're seeing and these very, very dry conditions. So, yeah, I spoke with a range of folks. The municipalities were very vocal this year after the fire season. So Yellowhead County wrote a letter, you know, saying that they were not happy with sort of the resources that Alberta Wildfire went into the season. And that's not to criticize, I think, managers and boots on the grounds. These are higher level political issues, and really comes down to numbers. Like, we can't do more with less, essentially. Yeah, it was interesting to me to see how vocal the municipalities were after this fire season. And, you know, Mike Flanagan covered a lot of ground speaking about, you know, community preparedness and, you know, really communities should be having plans in place, exit points in and out of communities, if fires do threaten communities. East Prairie was one of the communities that saw, I think, 40 structures lost in early May last year. And they've been advocating for years for a second exit point out of their community. So, yeah, there's really pressing issues when we think about wildfire and the future of how communities can be better prepared.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned the 40 structures across the country. I can't remember what the figure exactly is for Alberta. Oh, it was 2.2 million hectares burned in 2023 alone in Alberta. And we have that the cuts to the firefighter rappel team in 2019 saved at least from that budget 1.4 million as well. The 2021 cuts 247 positions. Is there a sense of like how much we knew this was a freight train coming, but how much those cuts set us back in managing the fire or in mitigating the fire's impact?
I mean, I could speak only anecdotally to that, but there was a real fear. 2022 was my last year with Alberta Wildfire, and there was a real fear, growing fear of, the RAP program gets a lot of attention. But in reality, a far greater concern that folks had was that even though the fire seasons are starting earlier and getting longer, seasonal contracts of wildfire personnel were being shortened. So, and I'm shortened by up to 4 weeks. So it was becoming, as a seasonal worker, really difficult to continue this line of work because it just wasn't financially worth it, right? When you only work 4 to 5 months out of the year and your contract is cut by 4 weeks, like that's substantial. So, you know, the RAP program gets a lot of attention in the press, I think, because it's sort of it's easy to look at that. But a far greater concern amongst myself and my former colleagues was that, you know, what was holding us to these jobs? What was retaining staff? And retention is a far greater issue right now because you can, for example, this year, they're hiring on an additional 100 firefighters, but these are unskilled folks coming to the fire line. Really, you know, Mike Flanagan was saying, we really need to invest in boots on the ground and hit these fires hard when they break out. And that requires skill and that requires retaining firefighters. So that's something the Alberta government has been struggling to do, or the program has been struggling to do. And not just over the last year, but maybe over the last like 6, 7 years. And this is an issue impacting other fire agencies too, I should say, BC Wildfire as well. And other smaller agencies across the province or across the country as well. So, yeah, there was real concern going into this fire season.
So you also touch on in this piece, and I find it really enlightening, the First Nations knowledge and experience in, I guess, for lack of a better term, forestry stewardship and doing cultural burns. Can you explain a little bit about how that is seen as part of the solution and sort of the course correction here on how we manage and, I guess, prevent future forest fires or wildfires?
Yeah, so I interviewed Dr. Amy Cardinal-Christensen, and she's a leading wildfire scientist in Canada. She's currently working with Parks Canada, and she spoke with me about some of her research that she's done, and she's put out co-produced another book with another researcher, Indigenous wildfire scientist. And First Nations communities are disproportionately impacted by wildfire in Canada. They make up 42% of the wildfire evacuations within Alberta last year. Like in the Peace Country where I grew up, the communities to my north, Dene communities, there's a community of Chate that was actually evacuated 3 times in 2023. So this is a serious issue facing First Nations communities. And, you know, Amy is really advocating for a fire guardian program. And this is Indigenous-led fire guardian program. And this is something that exists in other countries, including the U.S. and Australia. And it's seen successful results. And essentially, it's putting fire management into the hands of First Nations communities. So they're simply, agencies aren't responding to their needs, but they're actively involved in, you know, monitoring and mitigating the risks of wildfires. And that includes practicing cultural burning, which is not the same as doing a prescribed burn, which is something that we see at sort of a provincial government level. the cultural burning, you know, is according to indigenous knowledge of the land, the localized sort of knowledge of what's happening around them. So when the conditions are cool and damp, typically in the spring or the late fall, indigenous communities would have historically practiced cultural burning around their communities. So burning away a lot of that forest litter. So, you know, you've got like deadfall leaves. This is all the small, tiny things that catch and can easily cause the spread of wildfires. And this was historically banned with colonization. And actually criminalized. So people who practice this in their communities could, you know, be imprisoned for it. So Amy's research is really amplifying, you know, this history of cultural burning through colonization, and, you know, how it was impacted through colonization, but also, you know, empowering Indigenous communities. And that knowledge still exists. It still lives. And so supporting their right to practice cultural burning. So a fire guardian program would really, you know, put management decisions back into the hands of First Nations communities. So this is something she's advocating for.
Very interesting. It's acknowledged in this piece that, you know, as much as there's been myth about this all just tying back to some of that forestry practice from the last century or two, and its contribution or human-started fires, really, all of this disproportionately ties back to climate change, maybe the elephant or the wildfire in the room. And so I guess how much prevention or how much impact can we really have at this point? Or are we kind of just doomed to sort of this new normal of massive wildfires every year?
I mean, certainly climate change is driving, you know, weather patterns and conditions we've never seen before. It's a huge issue. On the other hand, you know, there are things we can do. For example, you know, Mike Flanagan was talking about how in California there's a mandatory fire smarting policy. Fire smarting means sort of clearing, you know, like small litter, like leaves, you know, like deadfall, cleaning up within 1.5 meters of people's homes, especially in, you know, urban settings or towns, the town settings as well. So, you know, this is something homeowners can even do. It's just like, what is around your home that could catch fire? And, you know, having a buffer of 1.5 meters. So, I mean, like, there are things that people can do on an individual level. But to see that, like, what we really need is like a government approach. So having mandatory fire smarting around your home. There are other things, you know, we saw happen in Canada last year, including mandatory forest closures. Now, that sounds extreme, but that's exactly like it sounds. It means limiting people's human activity in the forest, because humans are causing some of these wildfires. Many of them are caused by lightning, but in Alberta, I think it's around half, at least half, are caused by people. The Fort McMurray fire was started from an ATV catching, you know, the hot engine catching fire in the grass. And that fire literally, you know, causing one of the most, you know, damaging and costly wildfires in Alberta's history. So there are things that people can do to prevent wildfires. We have a role to play, and our government certainly has a role to play in making some of these things mandatory. So, you know, when it comes to forestry practices, for example, one forestry expert I spoke with said, you know, like, they're mapping the incidence of lightning on the landscape. There are areas on the landscape where lightning tends to hit more frequently. And, you know, they measure this year to year. So his idea was, well, if we're looking at where lightning is hitting, you know, through forestry, a legacy of forestry practices, much of the forest has been planted with coniferous species, which are also pyrogenic species. That means the tree has literally evolved to burn to be able to reproduce, right? These are species that include like pine and spruce. And so instead of planting, you know, softwood species that are pyrogenic trees in these areas where lightning tends to hit more frequently, why not plant hardwood species? That includes deciduous trees that have higher moisture content, and they typically slow down the spread of wildfires. And you even see that when you look over an area that's been burnt by a wildfire, you'll see these little islands of deciduous trees And so there are things that we could be doing differently. We're not, you know, it's not just all climate change and we should just sit back and say, you know, we just have to respond. I mean, this is part of the problem. You know, if you look in terms, like if we invest in prevention, that will save us money down the road.
Very interesting and very pressing subject. So thank you for sharing with us about that this morning, Trina.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Once again, I've been speaking with Trina Moyles. You can check out her piece in Alberta Views magazine, the April issue, Alberta is Burning. What are we going to do about it? You can also check out her book on Penguin called Lookout, Love, Solitude, and Searching for Wildfire in the Boreal Forest.
Driving white knuckles through the fresh white snow, a sad face, dry eyes from all the tears. I don't sleep well unless I'm at your place. Skip through every song, 'cause I don't know how to feel. I'm so stuck. Do I move on? Should I stay alone? And it's a shame that I can't heal. My open wounds are all too real. You should leave.